They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
This week on the Legion Clubhouse, now, is he a traitor or is he a double agent or is he a double traitor agent? I don't know. We're going to find out. I guess. Maybe. Who cares?
Tales of the Legion of Superheroes, number 314. The Trial of Antir, published August 1984. Written by Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz, with art by Terry Shoemaker. Synopsis: a traitor on trial. But where does the Dark Circle fit in?
Time for the old lizard man to stand trial, Matthew.
Yes. Sort of, I guess.
I mean, makes sense. He's been the traitor all along, except he's been under secret double orders from the science police to go undercover as a double agent for the Dark Circle, and then to do what the Dark Circle say, except he's supposed to report back to the science police or something like that. It's very convoluted. This really honestly sounds like something that Donald Trump is going to try to use if he is arrested and goes to trial.
I think in some ways, yes, it is convoluted, but I think it's also... it's also a question of how do we justify different writers' takes on the Antir situation, because some have written him as a traitorous jerk and some have written him as a guy who's undercover. And those are both canonical moments. If we go back, because Antir has been around for like, God, 40 or 50 episodes now. So yeah, I feel like this may be a little bit too much work done on Levitt's part to try and pull everything together and explain why X happened where there was Y, G, H.
Except so when they go and they confront Chief Kimball Zindak, Chief Kimball Zindak, he's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. We have no records of this. And then Antir is like, okay, fine, I'm out of here. And then he has a spaceship crash through Weber's world and expound with him somewhere into deep space.
Yeah.
Which Weber's world is pretty big. I'm not sure, because I don't know if it's in this issue or the next issue. Brainiac's like, I'm using my force field to try to keep Weber's world from collapsing. It's like, it wasn't, number one, it wasn't a very big spaceship. And number two, that's not a very big hole.
Weber's, yeah. I feel like he may have been like plugging the hole with his force field, but I also feel like the Weber's world thing is weird because they call it a world and it's described also as a moon. But then if you also
it's a planetoid.
Right. But if you look at it in context, you look at the ships flying past it, it doesn't look like it would be even big enough to be like a it's like, I don't know, maybe it's a microplanet.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Death Star. I mean, it is literally a Death Star. That's all it is.
Sure.
So, yeah, there's spaceships that are smaller than it, definitely.
Yeah. And, of course, Ambassador Relnick is back. You remember Ambassador Relnick?
Yeah, of course.
He's the guy who sent Triplicate Girl and Chameleon Boy to the planet where some people are purple and some people are orange, the War of the Days and the Nights.
Yeah, The Stars Upon Mars. I remember that episode.
Yeah. The Stars Upon Mars? No, that's
yeah,
Sneetches.
He's the one that convinced all the Starbelly Sneetches that they needed not to have stars, and the non-Starbelly Sneetches that they needed it. And then Triplicate Girl was like, I'm out of here, and one of them exploded, and that's how we got Duo Damsel. It's all right there in Legion Clubhouse episode 212. Go and look for episode 212, and we talk all about it right there. Anyway, back to this story. Because Antir has escaped, Supergirl, Brainiac 5, and Sunboy have to go after him, and so they fly off through space, which I thought they all had. I thought Sunboy could fly on his own power without a flight ring, so I'm not sure why Supergirl has to carry all of them, unless it's to point out that Sunboy's a jerk and he's going to do inappropriate touching to Sungirl, and HR at the Legion Clubhouse is going to have a talk with him.
Again. Sunboy, Sunboy flies, but only flies with a flight ring, to my knowledge.
Okay.
So I don't recall Sunboy flying under his own power.
But he's got the power of the sun.
Yeah, I'm aware that he has the power of the sun. But initially, you recall the power of the sun meant that he glowed really bright. And then it's like, oh, no, he can also do heat. And lately, it's been like, oh, yeah, he's a fire dude. But, you know, what does the power of the sun mean? I don't know. He's four times as big as the other people, and his gravity well is much thicker.
I guess. Meanwhile, Antaire is back on the Dark Circle planet, wherever that may be, because no one knows where planet Dark Circle is at. Nor would anyone have any idea where the secret chamber, where the secret organization of the Dark Circle meets on a regular basis. No one would know where that is. But meanwhile, back on that location, Antaire is in front of the Black Circle, and they're putting him on trial. And he's like, no, no, don't you understand? I was working for you all along. And they're like, yeah, but you never contacted us. And they're like, right, because you told me not to contact you unless there was something really important. And I was waiting until there was something really important.
Yeah, I mean, Antaire is a liar. He's a lying liar. What lies?
Yeah, so you can't believe him anyway. And I don't think that there is a solution to saying, well, whose side is he really on? I think the only side that he is on his own side.
And that is actually more true than you know, as we'll find out not too far down the line. But yeah, Antaire is a lying liar. What lies?
Yeah. Then the trio smash in and they're going to do some smashing and some bashing things, or at least they show up to do some smashing and bashing. And it's a pretty cool full page splash with a little inset.
It is.
I like that. I've never been a fan. I think we've talked about this before. I'm not a fan of Supergirl with a headband. Never have been. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. If you're trying to scream 80s, if you're trying to scream Jane Fonda workout or Olivia Newton-John workout, putting a headband on Supergirl certainly says that she's got a VHS tape coming out very soon.
Do you know why she has a headband?
I have no idea.
The Helen Slater movie that came out in 84 initially was going to use the headband.
Yeah.
So they added the headband in the comics, and they made a remark about how headbands, if you go back to the very first appearance of Superman, headbands are part of the thing because Jor-El was wearing one.
Mm-hmm.
But then they changed the costume for the movie and didn't use the headband, leaving Supergirl with the headband that never shows up anywhere else. Personally, I like it simply because it makes her stand out even more from Cousin Cal. Just like I like this costume has those blocks of red on the shoulders that lean out. So if you look at it, she's not wearing the traditional blue Supergirl suit. She's got a red skirt. She's got the red blocks that come off of her S shield. So I feel like this is one of the, I won't say better because Supergirl never really had a great costume.
I know some people really like it.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I know you like it. I just could care less about it. I think it's really
hurtful.
I said you can like it, and that's fine. I have a different taste than you. And for me, this is a costume that doesn't really do anything except muddy up what was a very simple, traditional, very good design. I think the only addition to this costume that makes sense is that she's wearing biker shorts underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is probably the only sensible addition to this costume, but everything else is just like, hey, let's add something simply because we can add something. And I think it adds nothing to a classic design or a classic character. And as I said, when I first mentioned the headband, it really screams dated 80s.
I like the red skirt and I like the pleated skirt here. And that's really kind of cool. And, you know, this is something we're talking about, the art. This is, I believe, the first appearance on the art team of the new Tales of the Legion art team of Shoemaker and Kiesel. And Shoemaker is actually one of the guys who came out of New Talent Showcase in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, DC was like, hey, if you want to be a comic writer, draw Mr. Forky. No,
that's a scam. That's a scam. That was like Art Institute of Chicago or something. I don't remember what that was. It was like, hey, draw Timmy the Turtle or Perry the Pirate.
Yeah. I had completely forgotten about Shoemaker, because of guys like, Andy Kubert and Norm Breyfogle, who also came out of the New Talent Showcase, and Mindy Newell, who we see not too far down the line in Legion Hero stuff, but This is interesting to me.
She was great on Facts of Life.
I'm going to hit you. I'm going to hit you with a stick. I honestly look at this issue and you know what I feel? Especially that big shot of the three of them smashing through the wall. These guys are trying to do old school Giffen before he went all experimental. This feels like they're trying to do a take on Giffen's art from the 290s when you were complaining that everybody was an Eclipso.
I mean, everybody is an Eclipso.
I really like it.
Haven't you heard that Ookla the Mock song? Everyone is an Eclipso.
And I think that the Invisible Kids look phenomenal under Shoemaker's pen, but I'm just
So there's a couple of problems that I have with this, and I think we've talked about this before with, you know, it's like in Africa, or maybe it's not in this issue, it's in the next issue. In Africa, you know, we can find Invisible Kid 2, and it's like, oh, God, you know, guys, I know what you're trying to do, but not all black people live in Africa.
Well, yeah, but Jacques comes from the Ivory Coast. That's why he speaks French.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, he could have very easily come from New Orleans or someplace else. He could have come from France. Why not France?
And, you know, given the conversations that we had about Tyrock back in the 1976 issues, I agree with you. I think it's a thing.
Yeah. Anyway.
But I also feel like they're just trying to, you know, globalize things because I think we have five Legionnaires who are from New York. They're like, well, literally from
New York. New York runs from Maine all the way down to Miami and all the way west to St. Louis. So, you know, to say someone's from New York is really, you know, but not saying a whole lot.
Sun Boys from Metropolis, Wildfires from Metropolis, Bouncing Boys from Metropolis. I mean, all of these dudes who are just like hanging around, I feel like it's like CBGBs. They're only on stage.
It is not that, though. While it's great that we have characters from Saturn or from Iron Planet or from, you know, wherever world, that is very on par with both DC and Marvel and always has been, right? All of our characters are all East Coast characters. All of our heroes are all living in New York, some above this street, some below this street. And that's how we differentiate Metropolis and all this stuff. And it's because most of these creators are living in the East Coast. And so, and a lot of them right in New York or New York City. And so we get in this weird sense of we're the center of the universe kind of thing. So everybody comes from there. So that is not as surprising or disappointing as here's a black person. Oh, by the way, he comes from Africa. Anyway, Invisible Kid 2 is trying to talk with Invisible Kid 1. And Lyle is just super depressed, which I think is survivor's guilt.
Well, and he's watching the video of himself being killed by Validus.
Right.
That's got to be freaky. That is not something that I recommend. Somebody needs to get this kid, first of all, away from the holotapes, but more importantly, to his friends.
Yeah.
His friends are here. Phantom Girl and Ultra Boy and Saturn Girl are here. Why are they not?
Well, Saturn Girl is technically not okay. Here. She's busy. And Lightning Lad are off.
Busy.
I guess trying to have a normal life.
They're about to have a baby.
Yeah, I know, but they're trying to have a normal life. I mean, they're definitely not going around in costume. They're trying to not be recognized. I think they're just, you know, really trying to step away as much as they can in that. But you're right. He needs to go see Dr. Bones and have his head examined. And yeah, he definitely, I mean, Invisible Kid 2 should be like, hey man, this is not something you should watch. And he should pick up the remote and turn it off and say, let's go for a walk.
Someone should stop him and stop him quickly.
But again, I think this is a bad depiction of the product of its time because, or I should say it's an appropriate depiction of the times because today, if I walked in and my son was watching, you know, some video where, you know, kids his age are hanging themselves, et cetera, I'd be like, dude, this is not appropriate. This is not good for your mental well health. We need to go out and we need to go and do things. We maybe need to go and see a therapist or do whatever that needs to be done to go ensure your mental wellness. But in 1984, you certainly don't do that because men don't cry. You need to toughen up, stop acting like a girl, and go run a few laps. That is the mentality of 1984 for men and mental illness. And it very much ripples through society to today, where people our age never got that mental health that they needed. And so then that filters on to further generations. So this is troubling on a number of different reasons. Number one, because Invisible Kid 2 is, or Lyle just says, go away. And right. Jacques is just like, okay, bye.
Well, Jacques is very reactive in this whole storyline, and it kind of bugs me. Because if I were Jacques, the first thing that I would be doing is I would be getting Element Lad on the horn. I would be getting, you know, telepaths. I would get people to help this man. Yeah. I would not sit and watch him.
Yeah, but put yourself
destroy himself or fall apart.
Put yourself in Matthew 1984 position.
Well, Matthew 1984 was 13. He didn't know Jack. But yeah. Also, well, I feel like within the confines of this story, we're almost supposed to believe that Jacques is being very cautious because he's afraid that Lyle is going to come back and it means he doesn't get to be a Legionnaire anymore.
Yeah.
And he almost comes out and says it in this issue, but
I think he does say it in this issue at one point, I thought.
He comes very close to it. He's like, do I even, have a place with the Legion anymore? But I feel like we're supposed to, as readers, kind of get that Jacques is acting weird because Jacques worries about his actual place in the Legion. But I also feel like it doesn't quite work for me because Lyle is sitting there saying, I just want to die.
I know, and he says, you don't look dead. You look rather healthy, rather depressed, or merely depressed. And it's like, okay, again, there's this disconnect between mental health and health in the 1980s. And even today, there's a lot of people that still don't understand that the mind body are very much interconnected with one another. And it's just, I guess, because we have lived as long as we have lived, seeing, an archaic, and even going all the way back to the early days, we've talked about this before, as we look at these through the lens of today, it is shocking and off-putting. But look at this through the lens of 1984, we would probably say, yeah, that seems about right. I don't know what's wrong with Lyle. He just needs to shrug it off. Be a man up, Lyle. And that's how we would probably look at this. And we would look at this as Lyle is just going through a funk. Every guy goes through a funk, but they end up rubbing some dirt on it, and then they're okay.
I don't know if that's as universal a take as you would think in 1984.
1984? Oh, yeah, I think so.
In 1984, I was, being raised by a female grandparent who was clinically depressed. But, I don't know. I feel like there's an undercurrent here that you are absolutely right. The future should be better about this. But there's also an undercurrent here of Jacques doesn't know what to do, and the story doesn't really have a clear idea of what it is.
I feel like this needs to, this final panel, when Lyle's just like, I just want to rest in peace for good or whatever. Instead of saying next judgment, it should have that little PSA panel that says, if you or someone you know is going through depression or, thoughts of suicide or death, have them call. I forget what the number is. Oh, 988 is what it is.
There you go.
988 is what people need to call. So that would be a perfect place for this to be put, but it's not there.
Well, fortunately, Major Spoilers can put it right here.
Yeah. Which we already did.
If you enjoy the show, we would appreciate your support. You can find out more and become a Legion Clubhouse member at patreon.com/majorspoilers. A Witch Shall Be Born. Published August 1984. Written by Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz, with art by George Tuska. Synopsis: The Origin of the White Witch.
So what we're going to do is end 314 and then running through 315 and 316, we have a backup story at Tales of the Legion of Superheroes, which is where we take a moment to look at the origin story of a Legion member, because Block is somehow rather obsessed with finding out everything he can about the Legion members, I think, instead of on tear. we really need to be shining our spotlight on Block, because I think Block is the true spy that that's trying to find out all the information he can. And this time he's turned his sights on the White Witch.
Well, I think that there's two things going on here. They have established that Block feels out of sync with the, you know, the carbon-based life forms, even though he's a different kind of carbon. And if you look at him throughout this story, first of all, George Tuska draws a weird Block, but he is clearly injured and pitted, and he's had the snot kicked out of him, and he's lost his nose. He was badly beaten not so long ago, and I kind of feel like maybe he's just hiding out and feeling, you know, kind of like, you know, a sanctuary kind of thing, where he feels like he's just this weird monster now. I don't know. It is very strange to see just the way this is set up, but
yeah. Anyway, we learn, you know, obviously when you look at the White Witch, she looks completely different than Dream Girl. And you may be saying, well, how can these two be related? And so we're going to go back and we're going to tell you the story about the magical world of Naltor, which is a matriarchal society, which we'll put a pin in that because it'll come back around before this particular issue ends. But what ends up happening is she doesn't have the power of foresight. Granted, even Dream Girl doesn't really have the power of foresight. She is shoved aside and cast out as a reject of society. And she does learn through her own studies that the magic world, and I forget what the name of the magic world is, that they can go and they used to know how to do real magic. And so she's like, well, if I don't have the power of foresight, maybe I can go to this planet and learn all about becoming a real magician. And the only way that she's able to make that decision is because her mother, who is like one of the head muckety mucks of Naltor, gets blowed up real good. And as a 10-year-old, she's like, I will go to magic world. And then this dude, what is this guy's name?
Baron?
Yeah. Yeah. He's just like, yes, I will allow you to go and I will make these rules. And I'm like, wait a minute. Just didn't a minute ago you say that there was a matriarchal society and now there's a dude who is in charge and calling the shots? That seems rather odd.
It's strange. But it's also, I don't know. When we start talking about Naltor and we start talking about Misa going to Xerox, we fall into that same problem that we have with Orando, in that it doesn't feel as backwards. It's not like Planet Camelot.
No.
But it definitely feels like it's more of a weird quasi-Greek society almost, where they're like, oh. Well,
okay, so I don't know if I have it here because my notes originally got deleted and I had to go back and rewrite them. This is very weird because they keep mentioning Cassandra, which is the Greek goddess of prophecy and foresight. Mm-hmm. And it's like, all right, they're supposed to be on a space planet far away. Why are they mentioning Greek gods, and why are they, you know, relying so much on Greek gods in this? And again, I kind of brushed it off. I let it go, I guess, because it's like, well, I guess the writers are trying to say something to the audience about, you know, about this, and they just don't realize the
universality of myth. Or
I don't even think it's that. I just think it's like, I need to put something in here that sounds ancient, so I'll use Cassandra, even though there's no way that this planet, billions of miles away from Earth, would ever know anything of the Greek gods.
I don't know. In fact, I'm almost certain that they haven't revealed it yet. But there comes a point where we find out that the common myths of Naltor and Thar and, you know, all of these planets that we see from the Legion, your Rimbors and your Bug Tussles, there's a good reason for it. And I think it comes before the crisis, but it may not. But I think that it's not too far around the corner where they finally do explain why is this weird stuff happening? Why are the Xanthuans, you know, obsessed with?
Yeah, and why does everybody call everybody else humans? And why do the Klingons and the Vulcans and the Earthlings all share a common ancestry? Because their planets were seeded.
And when you look at, remember that Starboy history we had not too far ago, Starboy was talking about constellations that A, are from an Earth perspective, and B, have Earth names. be, there's a reason for it.
Yeah. Also, you wouldn't have those
retcon.
Those constellations, if you were on another planet, wouldn't be the same constellation. So that's right.
And
that's
problematic. Be the same place in the sky. It's a whole.
So anyway, Misa goes to Magic World. Misa go to Magic World, and it plays out very much like a kung fu movie, because she shows up and like nobody wants to help her, and she has to prove that she's worthy to be trained by the monks of Magic World. And then as she goes through it, we discover that, oh, she is really good at what she does. And all of the other mages on the world are like, oh no, she's really good. She's really, really good. And then there's one guy who's just stroking his beard and is like, I don't like this one. And it's, and before you know it, we discover that this is not a White Witch origin story. This is a Mordru origin story, because Mordru used to be on this planet until he got he was threatened by a little girl, a little 10-year-old girl. He was so threatened by her that he turned her into an ugly hag during her final ceremony. And all of the mages were like, well, look, she's ugly. Therefore, she must be evil and we must banish her from this planet. And Mordru's like,
right. That is messed up. I mean, this is a teenage girl and you're just like, now she's hideous. Ugh, I hate that. Now, is this the first time, and I can't remember, that we have specifically that they've made the tie between Misa and Mordru?
Oh, yes. Remember when the old hag, there was, remember the issue with the old hag?
I remember, she was working for Evilo.
Yeah, she was working for Evilo. I don't think Mordru was mentioned there. So, you know, they're doing some work to say, hey, all magic comes from the same source. And Mordru just so happens to have been on this planet. And somehow, within literally probably 10 years, aged into a wicked old man because... probably. Yeah, obviously he can grow old and ugly very, very quickly. But yes, because she's ugly, she must be cast out. And she goes out into the world and she just doesn't really know what she is going to do. And she falls in with Evilo, and Evilo is like, follow me and we will do things together. And so they go out and they do evil things until, of course, Dream Girl shows up and says, I love you. And through the power of love, all her evil, ugly looks goes away and she comes back to be Dream Girl's sister. And then she's like, I must go back to Planet Magic and finish my learnings. And she does. And she studies too hard and antenna grow out her head, which I think is the writers telling kids, hey kids, you better put these books down, because if you do too much book learning, you're going to get all white and ugly looking with antenna coming out your heads. And then Bouncing Boy shows up and goes, I got to go and deliver me this important delivery mission, but I'm going to go first stop at the Magno Ball match and maybe drink these files down first. Oops.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack there. Most of it is not entirely wrong, but I do
she
like does.
She goes
fact,
and she studies too much, and all of her the mages are like, you need to go outside and exercise. And she's like, no, I'm going to study. Yeah. And then she grows these antennas and turns white.
We asked the answer back in 291. How did Misa go from being just a regular red-haired girl to being this weird pink person with antennae? It just sort of happened.
Yeah.
She what happens when you study too magic, much? And the magic turned her into a thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's meant to tell kids, don't study or you'll be ugly, but
I mean, hey, maybe we don't know.
No, we do know.
We don't know the writer's intent. And so then she has to decide, am I the master of both worlds, as the hero's journey says, or shall I return to only one? And she decides, I am a master of both magic and Legion, so I will consider myself a full-fledged member of the Legion. And then she and Block hug, and it's all a happy ending.
I do like that, though, because Block just sort of walks away from her in mid-sentence, which is weird. But he's like, well, she clearly found her answer, but she has not. And so she does a little spell where she literally takes a chunk of magic and puts it on a scale, visually balancing her magic chunk against her Legion flight ring. And I'm like, that's kind of neat. visually speaking, I feel like that's kind of neat. And again, we have things tied to ritual with Mysa's powers that do not necessarily limit her, but constrain the things that she can do. Because as we see,
yeah, except I'm going to bet that she did not have a balancing my magic against the Legion spell prep for that morning.
Clearly she did. Or else it wouldn't have worked.
She would probably have to go talk to her sister who has the power of foresight, and her sister would say, tomorrow, prep a spell that seems so useless that it will come to be. And she's like, all right, I guess I'll do this. Oh, I forgot. Prep a spell, Shug, that lets you see the most useless spell you have and put it to use. And my hair and nails, Shug.
Do you need a hug?
I'm fine. I am fine.
Here's the thing. I really like that Mysa's story takes an element that we've seen before in the Legion.
Yeah.
And it's an element that most comic books can't do. What is it like to live on a planet of hats and not have the hat? Because we saw Mech Ranz on the planet of twins.
Yeah, it goes all evil.
Yeah, he went evil. He went evil because he felt alienated. And we look at like Cosmic Boy. Cosmic Boy later on down the line has a little bit of a thing where, you know, he has to deal with, am I still a Braylian if I don't have magnetic powers? So
right.
I like seeing Mysa worry that she's not really Naltorian, or that she doesn't fit in, or she's not really what she seems to be, because she's so alienated from her own people. It's kind of neat. It's like, you know, it's like in Star Wars, every planet has one biome. So you have like the jungle planet, and you have the ice planet, and you have the desert planet, and then you have the planet of weird rocks. That's kind of the way the Legion goes, but you never ask yourself, what if you're a desert planet guy and you're on the ice planet?
Well, you climb inside the Tauntaun, and then you say, yes, the scales are balanced, and it certainly smells in here, but I will become a member of the Legion. I will.
Tales of the Legion of Superheroes, number 315, Judgment. Published September 1984. Written by Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz, with art by Terry Shoemaker. Synopsis: the end of the Dark Circle?
All right, we need to wrap up this episode, Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
Our heroes have landed on a secret world where the Dark Circle reside, and it's punching time. Which I'm okay with punching time, but it just seems to go on a lot longer than I thought it should.
There's a lot of fighty that,
I mean, granted,
really
this
feel necessary.
Yeah, granted, this is the last time we're going to see Supergirl as a member of the Legion of Superheroes.
Right. And
so maybe they need to give her due or something.
I think that is what it is, because honestly, if you look at it, this issue came out in May of 84.
Mm-hmm.
And Crisis, the first issue of Crisis, came out in December of 84. The last issue of Supergirl's solo book came out the month before this, about a month before this Legion comic hit the stands. Clearly, we know that the plot has been in motion since like 1980 to do the Crisis, and to kill Supergirl at this point is definitely on the table. This is literally just knife twisting. They are literally giving us Supergirl here in Brainiac's face, talking to Brainiac, doing Brainiac-y things, so that once something bad happens to her, I sure hope nothing bad happens to that Supergirl there, Mr. Dux, that it hurts him more, because again, you know, the last time they were actually seen together was like 1974.
Yeah.
So you can't have him, you know, obsessing about his lost love if he hasn't seen her since 1974. So I'm really sort of fine with it. I like the fact that Supergirl has been hanging around with the team since, I think, before the Great Darkness now.
She hasn't gotten a lot of attention, though, because I was like, man, it sure feels like a long time since we've seen Supergirl do something in the pages, right? Or stand around the background, maybe.
This feels like the longest prolonged period of Supergirl appearances ever to me. I mean, we see her throughout the Silver Age. We saw her a lot of times when it was one of her stories dealing with the Legion, but
right.
I don't think we ever saw her in the team month after month after month, or part of the team and then popping up again month after month.
Yeah, no, she
just like a regular
made that,
member.
She made that claim probably after Great Darkness that, you know, she was going to stick around in the future for a while. And that made Brainiac 5 really happy. And now we barely get any Supergirl stories between her decision to stay in the future and her decision to be like, well, I guess I got to go back home. My work here is done. I've taken down the dark circle. I snapped my fingers and they all poofed and disappeared. The whole planet poofed and disappeared, which I will say
teleported away and left behind their pants.
Yeah. Which is weird because when we next see them, they're all wearing pants again. So I'm not really sure.
Well, I mean, how that makes sense. Don't you have extra pants?
I mean, I don't wear two pants at the same time.
But you own more than one pair of pants.
Do I though? Ask my students. They'll say, I think that guy wears the same clothes every single day.
Right. You wear a blue polo shirt and cargo shorts like you're working at the Home Depot. But the thing is, they teleport away. I have no problem with the whole teleporting away, leaving behind your evil cloak, because I kind of feel like the whole point of the circle is that they're wearing normal clothes under there and they're just dressed like the Time Trapper's fan club to be part of their secret cult. But yeah, it is weird that they teleport home and all of a sudden they have, more. Yeah. You wonder if there are any bed sheets left on Dark Circle Planet. If everybody's just sleeping on a bare mattress.
Probably. I mean, they're Cthulhu monsters. I think this is the first time we actually get to see the Dark Circle without their stuff on. And he's definitely a Cthulhu monster.
One of them is, yeah. Antir, once again, is in play here. I hate Antir.
He's staying by the same argument. But you don't understand. I was working for you all this time.
Mm-hmm. And then Cthulhu fights Supergirl, which, honestly, I mean, who doesn't want to see Cthulhu fight Supergirl? Who cares? I don't like Sunboy. Sunboy's a jerk. But, yeah, we get to the point where they're fighting. In rush the science police.
Who have been following the trail of destruction that Supergirl has left across the galaxy.
Yep, and Antir is pointing a gun at Sunboy, and suddenly Chief Zendak shoots him.
Which is, I find, right super suspicious, right? Yeah,
it is incredibly suspicious.
No, so, I mean, on the one hand, if you were a police officer and someone's holding a gun, you would say drop it, which he does, right?
Right.
And then Antir looks at him, doesn't drop the gun, and then Zendak fires the gun and presumably kills him. We see brain matter on the floor in the final panel. And so you're like, okay, that makes sense, except that we know that Antir is like, I'm playing both sides against each other and everyone knows I'm undercover. And if you are the secret person who doesn't want your secret revealed,
right,
you would probably shoot the one guy who would be able to reveal you as a double triple agent, and Chief Zendak is now prime suspect number one.
I agree.
He's the real mole.
Really. And for years, we have seen the science police for 30 years at this point. I cannot remember a science policeman ever causing a casualty in this book before.
Also, all of the science police show up in this issue. Remember, there's only 10 science police and all of them show up.
All 12 of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that makes sense to me because you're dealing with what is essentially a galaxy level threat in, the Dark Circle cult. But it really feels suspicious, and it does not feel like a wrap up of the Antir storyline. It feels like there's more to it. There's like more conspiracy hiding in the wings, but then it immediately gets swept under the rug for the romance of Kara going, the whole trip to the 30th century has been a big mess. I'm going to go home. I don't love you anymore, Brainy. Bye.
And he's like, oh, man. And I just got done being not crazy.
Right. It is knife twisting. And in retrospect, I will give them this. It is really well done knife twisting. And it's a good 6 months in advance. Back in the day, when they were putting together the Crisis, they were trying to think about these things. The Crisis was designed to try and fix timelines. It did not. It made them worse. But the expectation here that we were going to build this story and build this story that Levitz has done of, the Brainy flirtation with Supergirl, so that when something does happen, and I'm not going to say what,
she dies.
But I'm sure
she gets killed
in 1986. Yeah, that's not really a spoiler. Is it a spoiler if the comic book is 30 years old? Yes, no, it is. But
it is not.
More importantly, it was planned in advance. At this point, I am certain they knew she was dying, and this was just set up to give Brainiac,
I think,
a few issues down the line something cool.
If I remember correctly, the fans figured out that it was really supposed to be Superman that was going to die, and so they retconned it to be Supergirl. And then somehow Hawk shows up and is like, "No, I shall be the villain of this story." Waha!
You know, people listen to this show and expect that you're telling the truth,
and I am. Hawk showed up and said, "I am the villain because you figured it out." Waha!
Not for another 10 years. You're talking about Armageddon 2001.
That's how far in advance they were thinking. They had this plotted out. Now, I don't know if it's. I don't know if this is knife twisting in a way that is nice, because realistically, Supergirl died a long time ago. And even Brainiac knows that Supergirl died a long time ago because of time travel, right?
The future history is incomplete because of the great disaster, which at this point, Commandy is canonically part of DC history before the Legion.
Right. But I guess I don't really super buy it that Brainiac is that torn up that she's leaving. Yes, it's sad that she's leaving, but she can always come back 5 seconds after she traveled back to the past and travel 5 years into the future, time travel stuff. So I guess for Brainiac, it would be, man, she's going to come back any day now. And then she doesn't come back, and he's trying to write to her, trying to send her text messages, and she doesn't respond. And, you know, just this keeps happening month after month. And then finally she shows up as a real ghost instead of just ghosting him.
Right. She's phantom zoning him.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess the thing that I'm more disappointed in is not that Brainiac is going to be, quote unquote, sad, because 12th level intellects don't get sad. They get even. But I guess I'm more upset that she said she was going to stay in the future, and then we barely got any Supergirl stuff. And then she's like, "Well, I guess I'm going to leave." And it's like, okay, that just feels like so much wasted effort.
She has been around, and they have referenced several times how distracted Brainy is, how happy she is to be with the Legion. I mean, I don't feel like it's been a front burner plot line, certainly, but there are also 27 members of the team.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Do you think?
No.
It would be an interesting storyline.
No.
If subtly some members were saying, you know, Supergirl, ever since you've been here, Brainiac has just been super distracted. I mean, Superboy actually says that to Brainiac. He doesn't say it to Kara, but planting that seed of, oh, I guess I am a distraction. Maybe I should leave. No?
They played with it. I don't think they brought it to that level.
I mean, going directly to Kara and saying, hey,
I don't know that I would want to see that. Not necessarily because,
I mean, we have seen these characters be catty before, so it wouldn't be out of line.
We've seen them being, you know, flat out rude to each other, but you know, you have to kind of ask yourself, like I said about the two invisible kids plot line, where would we go to what intent would that be?
Yeah. Somebody's going to die.
I feel like the intent would, you know, it would just come across as mean. It would come across as the cool kids trying to throw away the, you know, the weird kid from the farm.
I mean,
but it depends on how you executed it.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm just scrolling back through past issues, and I have not hit an issue where Supergirl is in the story. And I'm going all the way back to, where am I at now? There's Senator Relnick saying something. I'm already back at issue 308, and Supergirl has not appeared in a single panel that far back. Let's see if I can go back anymore. Yeah, she just, I mean, literally it does a year's worth of stuff. She doesn't appear if these are still coming out monthly and not, you know, bi-weekly or bi-monthly or anything like that. She is not around for at least a year in the comics. And so for her to suddenly appear in two issues and say, my work here is done, my past needs me, whoop, and disappear is just what a waste. What a waste of a powerful character.
I don't know. I think you're right. She was in 300, 301, 302, 303, 306, 310, 314, 315.
Yeah, look at that big jump.
She was in 294, 300, 310 to 314. That's four issues. I mean,
She may be listed as a hero and may as a, be a back matter, but I see no red cape in any of these pages that I've been flipping through. And like I said, I'm already back on issue 304, and I have yet to see a Supergirl appearance. She's in the Legion of Superheroes annual because she has to stand around for the big picture. But yeah, I just, scrolling through that, I did not see any super logos in any of that. So,
well, you scroll too fast,
maybe, wow. But it just seems like even if she's in the issue, she'd be in more than one panel. If she's standing around and doing nothing, again, very much a wasted character and potential storytelling. So,
absolutely disagree.
That it's wasted potential for her to say, "I'm going to stay in the future, not be around for 10 issues, and then show up and say, 'I guess I'm leaving.'" Yeah, no, the creators haven't used me. The creators haven't used me, so I guess I got the message.
10 issues. You're underplaying her presence, and she was literally in the book 3 issues ago. I do not think that the underlying premise of your assumption is correct. So,
well, I'm literally flipping through the issues right now, and I do not see any super costumes. She's in a flashback in one, but it's like it's one panel where she's standing around. And that's the
A 3-page sequence in 310 about how Brainiac is incredibly distracted by Supergirl.
She's not in there. That's Superboy talking to Brainiac.
310.
All right. Let me see here.
It's got a big rubbery head on the cover exploding.
I know which one it is. I'm going through the pages to see 10. Where she's at.
She's on page 10.
I don't know what page I'm on. This one doesn't have page numbers.
Oh, that's right. Yours doesn't have page numbers.
No, there's nothing. There's nothing in here. I'm looking on issue 310.
And do you see a page with Brainiac 5 hovering over the unconscious body of Daniel Foucault?
Yes.
Do you see where it says Legion
Headquarters? That is not a.
That is a 3-page segment about Brainiac obsessing about Supergirl.
But what I'm saying is, Supergirl in one panel appearing, that is not, I do not count that as it, because it's just a picture of her. It's a holo recording. It's not her having to talk with him or having interactions. It's just a literal picture of her.
But it's literally what you're describing. It is literally him talking about their relationship.
No. What I'm saying, and I think you're misinterpreting what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if Supergirl is going to be on this team, they need to utilize her. And having her picture appear on a holovid because Brainiac is thinking about something else, she could be home in the past and the same thing could be happening. He could be thinking about her in a long distance relationship and the same thing could be done. What I'm saying is the writers didn't use a major character that they could have used in these stories to have her do more action. She literally is not in, I would say she is not in this book. Yes, sure, her picture appears in this book, but she is not in 310. She doesn't do anything in 310. That's like saying, oh, look, in the Legion roster, there's the logo for Bouncing Boy. So therefore, Bouncing Boy is in this issue. That I will argue that that doesn't count here. That really doesn't count here. Yeah, so get Supergirl involved in some adventures. Show her doing something. That's what I'm getting at here. And that is just not what the creators did when they had access to Supergirl. And maybe it is because, as you said, Matthew, that they were planning this out for a long time and they just needed to kind of sweep her under the carpet for a while. But it just seems like she's not doing anything until it feels like a year that she actually physically appears in the comic and then is like, I must be going home now. That's what I'm getting at. Listeners, what do you think? PodcastMajorSpoilers.com. And share your thoughts, and we'll share your thoughts in a future episode. That wraps it up for this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Matthew, what did we learn this week?
We learned that Legion of Superheroes number 15 is the first time ever that a woman has been credited as a writer on a Legion story, which is less celebration and more of a what the hell, guys.
I know, right? But it's still very important. I think we also learned that double agent, triple agent, quadruple agent. Also, if you have a mole, go have it checked out.
And last and certainly least, we learned that Dr. Jimmel once again has no time to deal with the Legion's bullcrap.
Thank you so much, everybody, for checking out this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. You can find us all over the place on the Twitter and on Patreon, patreon.com/majorspoilers. That's where you can go to support this show and all the shenanigans and deep insight that we bring you each and every time we release an episode. So until next time, I'm Counting Numbers Man.
And I'm the Skywalker Kid.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2023 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.